One, I mean, I golfed with you probably twice a month.
Yeah.
I would say that's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, let's just say we probably get in anywhere from 12 to 14 rounds a year.
Mm-hmm.
And of those 14 rounds, you know, I always peek in your bag and, oh, what new toys do you have today? I mean, I did the exact same thing, like, today. Like, oh, yeah. What new sticks you got? And obviously you've now come to a set of clubs that you feel comfortable with, but
yeah,
it always amazes me. And I even tell people, you know, about you, because I'll mm-hmm. be like, oh yeah, you know, how did I, you know, start hitting this driver? It's like, oh, it's funny. There's a backstory. And then friend of mine, you know, has his own podcast and,
mm-hmm. So now you're a part of it.
Jealousy is unhealthy.
It's all right.
To a point.
Listeners, we're talking right now. We're just going to get into it, I think. The voice you're hearing, well, you know me. This is Adam from golfandfiltered.com. You know you can reach me on Twitter at golfandfiltered, and you can send me an email at golfandfiltered@gmail.com. The other voice you're hearing is my buddy Matt. And so
that is I.
Yeah. And we were just kind of, we were talking about what we wanted to talk about today, and we didn't have any plans. We were joking because, like, normally when we have, as you guys know, listening to this, we've got people who talk about equipment a lot, which we're going to do. We have people that want to come on, companies that want to sell their stuff, basically. And there's always this agenda that I want to get to, but I literally have no idea what we're going to get to today. But I think we have at least some semblance of some topics.
It just goes to show you how important I am.
That's right. I didn't even take the time to put an agenda together. But before we get any further, we're drinking, and I don't know why I'm drinking again after yesterday.
Peer pressure,
but no, it's all right. And we're
because it's a cool can.
It is a cool. What are we drinking right now?
Dead Guy Ale Rogue.
So it's completely black. It's got white lettering on it, and this is pretty damn good. It's an IPA, 6.8. So hopefully this will. I'm still hungover. It is 9 o'clock at night, and you guys saw on Twitter today, and we're recording this on a Saturday evening. We played golf this morning.
We did.
This afternoon.
We did.
Kind of my morning. And it was definitely the worst hangover I've had in years. And it was me, you, and another friend of ours, another Adam. And went to Orchard Valley.
We did. In Aurora.
Yeah. So people local, Chicagoans, will probably know that. First time I'd ever been on the course.
As me.
Yeah.
And we kind of threw out the ground, you know, went back and forth on mm-hmm. Well, first of all, we played it on a Saturday afternoon, mm-hmm. 3 o'clock. We teed off about 2:45. And on Golf Now, we got a price of $35, which...
Ridiculous.
Pretty ridiculous around Chicago. You know, everywhere else we were looking was $55 and up. So... Mm-hmm. I live in Lyle, Adams in Lamont, so, you know, Orchard Valley was maybe 20 minutes from each of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked the course. The layout was actually really fun. There were a lot of different holes that you could play, you know, a number of different ways. But aesthetically, very pleasing.
Yeah.
Great par threes. The course was in great shape.
We didn't play the par threes great, but they were really nice.
Actually, one of them, both of us birdied.
Oh, you're right. I forgot
that
little
one. We
did
play that as a threesome 2 under.
Yeah.
We also played a few of them, more than a few over.
Well, we played the back tees, and from the back it was 67?
67.5, yeah.
Yeah, and I think they made up for a lot of yardage on the par threes. I mean, the last one we played was 212.
We played a number of them about 200 yards.
Yeah.
But then, you know, there was one that was a $130, so, mm-hmm. you know, kind of evened out, which was fun. It's fun playing, you know, like a cute little par three, and then an intimidating 200-yard par three that you have to carry water, you know, 190.
Right, definitely. And you know, we should probably talk a little bit about how we know each other. And so Matt and I went to high school together.
Way back
when. We
won't say how many years ago.
No,
that was.
No, that's fine. It was long ago enough. We went to college together then.
We roomed with each other for the first 2 years.
We did. And then, probably over, God, what, definitely over 20 years we've known each other, right?
God, that makes me feel so
I know. But you're a good player. You're probably legitimately not what the strokes we want to give you every time we play, but you're probably, what, a 4, 5?
I would say a 3 to a 4, so maybe okay. a 3.5. So I did play college golf at Bradley University for a couple years, my first couple years there. And then I decided that I liked the drinking aspect of college and the school aspect I obviously had to manage. So it was just a little too much to do everything. But no, it was a great experience. And now that I've been playing non-competitively for the most part, I've been playing non-competitively for about, 15 years now, and, started to love the game again, back like I did when I was a little kid.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you on that. I never played competitively. I played with you and our other friend who we played with today was a pro for a while at a country club. Really good player. Told us he had a dream that he was going to make 10 birdies and shoot 74, and he almost fucking did it.
So he tells us in a text, hey guys, I had a dream that I had 10 birdies and shot 74. Is that what he said?
That's what he said.
So he has in the past had round. He is an up and down player. He's a guy that, will roll in. He had 4 birdies in a row today.
Yeah, he did.
And then he had a couple doubles and he hit some of the worst shots that you would ever think of a guy that had 5 birdies in the first 7 holes.
Yeah.
We
had legit 59 watch going.
Not 59, but 10 birdies was definitely on. He rolled his 5th birdie putt in, and I said, swear to God, if you roll this in, I'm walking to the parking lot because I'm done.
And he did.
And he did.
Yeah.
But then he proceeded to have a little less than stellar back 9.
Yeah.
But regardless, it's all good fun. I love, when we can all get out together, me, you, and the other Adam, and just kind of shoot the breeze, have a few drinks.
Apparently drink an entire bottle of Bloody Mary mix like you did.
That's allegedly. allegedly. That happened.
So we, to transition to what we do at Golf Unfiltered and why you're involved now. Listeners, you guys know that we do a lot of stuff here. And when I say we, I pretty much mean me. My wife helps out every so often with, photography or whatever else. But it got to a point with, as you guys know, I've got a day job. Matt has a day job. This is not what I do full time. And so it got just to be not enough time.
A little overwhelming.
A little overwhelming, I guess, to do it the right way. This is the first podcast that we're recording in a couple weeks. Normally, I try to get it out every Monday, but it's just hard. And it's not a complaint. It's just that's the way life goes sometimes. And so I reached out to Matt and he offered, he's like, hey, yeah, I'll help out. So that's why you hear him now on the podcast. And so a couple things that Matt's going to help out with. He's going to be doing stuff like this whenever we have time to sit down. It's actually better to have a face-to-face conversation as opposed to always over Skype, which you guys know is what I normally do. He's going to test equipment for us too. Definitely gives it a different viewpoint than two people is always better than one.
Of course.
You get a different viewpoint than me. He's going to contribute a little bit to the website as well. We haven't really decided or figured out what he's going to write about, but it'll be something.
I got a few ideas up my sleeve.
There you go. See, he's already done his own due diligence. So at GU, we do a lot of equipment talk.
That sounds like, a university.
A university,
you've accumulated and
yeah, here at Golf University. Here. Right. And we do a lot of equipment talk. That's what people like to hear about. And you've got few things in your bag right now that are relatively new. I know today you're using a new putter.
I did. So just last, I think 2 weeks ago, got the Odyssey Old Works Tank number 7. And I love it.
You were making, you drained, a few 10 footers I saw today.
I would say probably at least 6.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
It was the ball was rolling really well. It's the second round that I played with it. I've always played the Odyssey 2 ball, and always liked the aesthetics of it. Lining it up, but I feel that I'm much easier and it fits my eye a lot better to align the putter to the line that I want to hit it on.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's the two lines on the putter, the different color scheme that it is. But the reason that I switched to the tank putter was I've always had a smoother, longer stroke, and I wanted a heavier golf putter head to be able to not have to swing as hard for you know, all my putts.
Yeah.
Just get the putter on a good momentum swing and on a good line, and I'm really happy with it.
Yeah.
I'm really happy with it.
It sure seems like you are. And, you know, I'm testing out, as you know, an Odyssey XO Rossi, I think is what it is right now. And I like it. I like the way that it frames the ball, as you just mentioned. You know, that came out, I believe the official release date was actually yesterday. I forget what today's date is, but it's actually quite nice.
In your bag before the release date?
It was. Yeah, I'm trying it out just for a little bit. I'm not going too far away from my the Huntington Beach putter that I love from Cleveland. You know, that's just a great putter. But it's nice to kind of mix things up every so often. And I'll probably end up going back to the Cleveland, to be honest with you.
Sure.
But, you know, in addition to the new putter you've got, you've also, in your bag, you've got Mizuno.
I do.
You got the
irons. The MP5s.
MP5s, that's right. And what are your thoughts on, they're basically blades?
They are.
Do you feel that, because even guys on tour, they play a lot of cavity backs. They play do. You know, so where do you think irons are going right now?
That's a great question. Yeah. So a little bit of background of the irons that I had played. The irons that I had in my bag before this were the Ben Hogan 1999 Apex blades, which were the best feeling irons that I have ever hit.
Yeah.
I just feel that, you know, when you hit it on that sweet spot, and it's unlike any club that you've ever hit. So I've always liked the feel of a blade. Yeah, it's maybe not necessarily as forgiving, but the way I think of a blade, I'm not a club manufacturer,
right.
But putting most of the weight behind the ball as opposed to the perimeter weighting, that's how I feel that, you know, an iron should be made. A great analogy is when you hit a hammer.
Yeah.
You know, you hit it, you line it up, and you hit the nail.
Yeah.
You know, if you turn it and you hit it a little on its side where the weight's not behind it, you're not going to hit that nail very, very sturdy.
And you know when you didn't hit it well.
Right.
So there's that feedback element.
Right, exactly. You know, if you know you hit it off the heel or off the toe, you know, you get that feel that
you get like a jarring almost. It's like when you're playing baseball or whatever and you don't hit the sweet spot.
Right.
You hit it off the handle.
Right.
You know that you hit it poorly.
You know, yeah. Yeah. So it does give, you know, a good feedback to, you know, next time I step up to a ball, you know, maybe make a little adjustments, because golf is all about a series of adjustments throughout the round. You know, if you're the first three tee shots you hit are all going left, you make an adjustment, you know, whether it be your grip or your swing path or your aim, whatever, to make the correction.
Yeah.
That's all it is. But getting back to the MP5s, you know, I feel that they're a great club. I'm still a little partial to my Hogans. I haven't gone back to them. I'm still giving it a chance. But no, I love the way they feel.
Mm-hmm.
They're not as unforgiving as people think. People get, I think, a little intimidated about, oh, those are blades, you know.
Yeah.
I can't play blades.
Right.
But I do love the where a lot of the sets are getting, you know, progressive to where, you know, the 7 to wedge are blades, and then the 6 to 3s, if people even have 3 irons anymore.
Right.
I know I do.
Yeah.
Are more of a more forgiving head.
Which is what I have now.
Mm-hmm.
I've got the combo set. The Srixon... They help me out, and I've got exactly what you just described. You know, I've got the lower clubs as blades, which are fine, and I know exactly how far they're going to fly when I hit them well.
Right.
But I agree with you, because the hammer analogy is a good one, because if you get that instant feedback like you just explained, I mean, you do have the opportunity to make the adjustment. But I got to tell you, at least for me, for the longer and mid irons, it's nice. It's almost, I've gained a club a distance. You know, what I've actually found, though, in mine, is so I've got the 6, and then it you know, branches over into the combo blade in the 7. There's a big gap there in distance. So if I've got like 170 yards, which I had a couple times today, no idea what I'm going to hit.
Right.
And I just pick one. But anyway.
So real quick, bouncing on that, like one of the things that kind of, it irks me a little is the newer sets of clubs, a four iron now is what a a three iron was.
Oh, the lofts, you mean?
20 years ago, the lofts.
Yeah.
So yeah, of course, if you strengthen the loft, these are I'm hitting these further. It's
that's
like,
fair.
Yeah, of course you are. It's everything is pushed up a half a club.
Yeah.
That's why the one thing I wish would have gained more traction was the Hogan Fort Worth irons, the progressive, to where you can pick what lofts you want for your iron set. Because the way I've always looked at it was I would rather have 10 yards between every iron from 100 yards to 170, and then maybe from 170 go every 15 yards, because you're going to have one more of the shots from 170 yards in.
Right.
And a lot of amateurs nowadays don't have the practice and maybe even the skill to, okay, I have a 120 yard shot. I hit my 54, 130.
Right.
I have to, choke down a little and make like three adjustments to hit the ball 120 yards.
Right.
It's like, no, all you have is that's my club or if you're in between clubs, it's only 5 yards, so you can just make small adjustments as opposed to this and that.
It's you hit the nail on the head again, not to go back to the hammer analogy, but people want to just go to the course. They may have hit the driving range sometimes earlier in the week.
Right.
They might hit balls before the round.
Right.
We didn't hit balls today, by the way. And then they just want to go out and play, and they expect to shoot their best score ever.
Yeah.
For them. And it's just, it doesn't work that way.
And they
way.
Said, why is golf so hard? I never practice.
Right. And I know we're talking about obvious things here, but it helps to take that step back and look at it from a higher perspective. Because, I agree with you that blades today are more forgiving than people give them credit for. I was playing blade. I can play them too.
Right.
But I'm losing out on a distance benefit that I'm getting from what I'm playing now, which is going to help me in the long term.
Sure.
But in the same token, I try to at least do something once a week, whether it be playing, whether it just go to the range, even if I'm just rolling putts on lunch.
Right.
You got to do something in the hope of getting better. But then there's, of course, the folks that just want to go out there and be outside, and they just want to play. They don't care necessarily. They want to go. They want to drink a thing of Bloody Mary mix. And that's what they want to do. They want to get out of the house for 5 hours.
They want to escape family for five,
right.
6 hours.
And I feel like we had a few of those guys in front of us today.
We did.
Which, whatever. But in addition to the irons that you've got, you also, you hit the heck out of these Apex hybrids that you have.
I do.
They're ridiculous. I mean, why even carry a driver?
So what I did was I made the mistake of going to Golfsmith when it was still in business.
Mm.
And, I'm just browsing. And then the guy's like, hey, hit this club. I'm like, all right. I hit it. And I was like, oh, shit. I have to buy this club. Sorry. Shoot.
That's all right. I dropped an F-bomb earlier. I didn't even think about it.
And I was like, man, now I have to buy this club. And then I bought the 2 hybrid, and then I'm like, man, now I have to buy the 4 hybrid because I hit the 2 hybrid so good. I took my 3 wood out of my bag completely because I just can hit this club off the tee and off the ground, and it's so versatile. And, I now have a driver and a 2 hybrid.
Yeah.
And it's just technology has come to – I was always kind of an anti-hybrid guy.
Yeah.
Because I always loved my 3-4 irons. I can hit those well enough to where I didn't need, a hybrid from, 200 plus out.
Right.
But it's they're just so easy to hit, and it's...
Which is interesting, because I actually went in the opposite direction. So I took the hybrid out of my bag, and I've got
in favor of
the utility iron,
right,
which is basically a hybrid. I mean the sole on the thing is pretty thick.
It's between a hybrid and a driving iron.
Yeah, it's really nice. And the U65 from Strixon is what I'm playing, and you guys know, you read the review on the site, it's an extremely solid club. You even commented today during one of the long par threes that I had to hit it on. How solid it sounds.
Now, what degree is that?
That is a 20 degree. No, okay. Hold on. Let me think. Yes, it's a 20 degree. Okay. I had to remember the...
Yeah. So it's right between my two hybrids, an 18, and my four hybrid is a 23.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, like a three iron on steroids.
That's all it is. Yeah. Yeah, it really is. And we've covered most of your bag. Wedges, you're playing...
I'm playing Titleist SM4s that I put in my bag probably 2 years ago. Just solid clubs.
Yeah.
I always teetered between Cleveland wedges, which were always solid. I played those, you know, high school and college. But now I just went to the Titleist wedges, got the, we went through my whole bag essentially.
Basically. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to figure out my driver situation. That's just,
you've got a situation right now.
Driving me nuts.
Yeah. It's
driving me absolutely nuts. So I shot 76 today at Orchard Valley, and I had 5 penalty shots.
Yeah, you did.
And they were 5 lost balls off the tee. Mm-hmm. It drives me nuts.
Yeah.
I just need something. I either need a great driver or I need a great lesson.
So and most people, you know, the easy thing is just to go buy a new club.
Right.
You
know, and that's what, you know, this club isn't working. Maybe this club will work essentially all I probably need to do is go to, you know, pound balls for an hour and maybe get a lesson on it.
Yeah.
But I just need something to consistently get off the tee. I hate being above a golf ball on the tee and
not knowing where it's going.
I feel so uncomfortable. This is where I want it to go, and not feeling very confident that the shot is going to turn out the way I want.
Yeah. And you hit a really high ball too. And so, you know, it could be a shaft thing. I don't know. But you've tried a few things in the time I've known you, obviously, for quite a while. And, you know, you'll get there eventually. Maybe it is just a matter of having a lesson, but who knows? I mean, those are hard to decipher as well, right? I mean, there's a million golf pros within our radius,
right?
You know, and we can go to a bunch of them. Hell, our friend that we were talking about used to be a teaching pro. I mean, he can give us lessons, and he does on occasion. But it's always hard. I mean, so, you know, is part of wanting to get better jumping to just buying a new club?
No.
Is it done that way because people just are confused with how many less pros are available?
No, it's the way that the golf club companies want to make you think. Because obviously not everyone that golfs is a scratch golfer.
Sure.
But hey, you're hitting that driver that's, you know, 5 years old. This new thing, this
McFace,
whatever, is going to change your game. And I get it, you know, from a golf manufacturing standpoint, they need to sell clubs, they need to market, they need to, why is it different, why do you need this club? And yeah, they could exaggerate the truth, it is what it is. But to become better, I'm not going to just magically put a golf club in my bag and it's going to fix everything.
Yeah, no, it can't. But that's what people want, and that's what people try.
People want the easy fix.
Yeah.
People want, I don't mind throwing money at it, but if I have to throw effort into practicing or getting a lesson, I don't know if I have that time or if I want to put in, you know, have the pains of becoming better the way that people normally do by practicing and by honing their craft.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's the big problem is just people just don't have the time or want to make the time for it.
That you have to in order to get better at anything, you know.
Unfortunately.
Sure. Now, you're also playing one of the most changed things that you and I both do are we change our golf balls.
We do.
And you're playing cut balls.
So, I had played Pro Vs probably the last 4 years. Mostly the Xs as opposed to the Pro Vs just because I wanted a little less spin. But you know, a couple of years ago, I did that Titleist, you know, promotion where buy 3 dozen, get the 4th free, which not a bad deal.
Sure.
But you're still paying $50 a dozen for the golf balls.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I'm paying for a golf ball, am I really seeing a difference in a $50 ball compared to a different ball? And now what I love is the last, I would say, 3 to 5 years, they've come out with these... you know, straight to, from the manufacturer right. to the direct consumer.
Yeah.
Straight to consumer golf balls, the Snells, the Vices, the cut golf balls, mm-hmm. which, you know, are probably, they may not be the best of the best, but the difference between them and the best is not worth paying the surcharge of an extra $30, $25 a dozen. Yeah. You know, if you can play a great golf ball for $20 as opposed to the best golf ball for $50,
yeah.
and the difference is mostly negligible, yeah. especially for amateurs.
Yeah, right.
I mean, my mind has been kind of opened, or my eyes have been opened to, you know, going that route.
Yeah. Yeah. We talk about it a lot on this podcast, and we've had, you know, guys from Callaway, we've had guys from Bridgestone, you know, Srixon, others come on, and they all mean well. And listeners, I mean, please understand. I mean, we appreciate that, but I agree with you. I mean, it is negligible.
Well, the balls that you said, the Callaways, the Titleists, the TaylorMades, those are the best balls.
Right, they are.
They are. You know, they are the most consistent, you know. They don't scuff as much, so yeah. they're longer lasting. Those are the best golf balls. But the secondary mm-hmm. market, the golf balls, are not as bad as they were in, I would say, 10 years ago.
Right.
You know, like the next level down Titleists, or maybe the Bridgestones or Srixons, like yeah. those balls just weren't as good. But I think the lower companies, the under $30 per dozen companies, have really made headway.
Yeah.
And I think golf is going in the direction of becoming more affordable, because golf clubs aren't going down anytime soon.
Yep.
Golf, you know, greens fees aren't going down anytime soon. So, no. you know, if you could play a efficient golf ball at an affordable price,
yeah,
I think that's it's
no brainer. Yeah, yeah, I mean,
it really is,
you know, my favorite ball is the Q-Star Tour, and I just looked it up here, and I forgot how much they cost per dozen. They're under $30, $29.99 a dozen. I mean,
is that the Srixons?
Yeah, the Q-Star Tour. I love them.
Yeah.
You know, I would put them up against, at least for my game,
yeah.
you know, any data that I would put out for hitting a Pro V1 or anything else. And so the same can be said about, you know, cut golf. I mean, these guys, you know, I mean, they're great. You can buy a dozen for $20 if you want to. And, you know, you go, your score's not being hindered. You still right. shot 76 today.
I will even say, you know, the cut golf ball on a couple of occasions, that wedge I hit on the par three, it sucked back probably, you know, 15 yards,
yeah.
which a Pro V would have done the same.
Right.
I don't see, yeah, Titleist, I love you. and yeah, you are the number one ball in golf. You constantly have the most people playing your ball at every tournament. You're obviously doing something right.
Right.
But obviously they have to, you know, pay for their marketing.
Yeah, and that's what it is.
Number one, and that is what it is.
They got to pay for their sponsorships. They got to pay for all that stuff. Right. So, you know, and it's funny because listeners, we're going to talk a lot. This is what we're going to talk about. You know, we're going to do more podcasts like this. We're going to, you know, have articles on the site, and we want to hear from you as well. Just your insights, and I know that you guys have talked a lot about it with me. On not only the equipment that you play, but also your opinions on both sides. You know, well, hey, it's $50 a dozen for a reason. We just talked about the main reasons, because right. they have to pay others. But we also know that, you know, people are very loyal. Brand loyalty is a really true thing. I mean,
it is.
The first driver I ever hit, I think, well, it was a wooden Spalding, a Spalding Elite. But then, you know, if you were given a Callaway Big Bertha from your grandfather, for example, I mean, you're probably going to be loyal to Callaway, and that's just going to continue. And regardless of whatever you see, any commercials or ads, because they can't, that's priceless. You know, you have that memory of what it is.
I will say that brand loyalty is a thing. One, like I said, I just went from an Odyssey 2 ball to a new Odyssey putter. The one thing that I do love about Odyssey is they have so many different models, because everyone has a different mindset of what they want, what they feel comfortable with over the ball.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, say, you know, years ago, they used to only come out with like two models a year.
Yeah.
You know, like maybe two different blades and two different mallets. Like this, these last couple of years, they've come out with like 10 or 12 different models,
mm-hmm.
Which is great. You make the same number of putters, you just make less of each putter.
Yeah.
And it's whatever feels most comfortable for the person, mm-hmm. you know, over the ball.
Yeah.
Like people change putters because one, it's just not working and they need something different.
Right.
But what do? They go and they look at it, they take a putter, they put it down, and they're like, oh, that looks good. Yeah. That fits my eye.
Yeah.
I
also think, not to interrupt, but I also think one of the main reasons people change putters so often is if you go in any store, it's the one club that you can hit without anyone helping you. You can just go in, grab a putter, roll a few putts, and yeah, there's some hitting bays that go, you know, but I do it. I'll go and I'll just say, you know, I got 15 minutes on lunch. I'm going to go try a couple putters. Oh, I like this one. Maybe I'll pick it up.
The one thing that I do think that people don't take into consideration is people do need to get kind of fitted for a putter.
Mm-hmm.
And not, you don't necessarily have to go to a custom fit, but so many people don't even know the difference between like a face balance putter and a toe down putter.
Right.
And it's for two completely different putting strokes.
Yeah, it is.
It's for, you know, the typical toe down is maybe like a Scotty Cameron blade, like a Newport,
mm-hmm.
That, you know, if it's basically, you know, you take it back and the putter blade is open and it squares. Yeah. And when you follow through, it's closed.
Yeah.
As opposed to a face balance putter, when you take it back, it's still as pretty square to the, more square than a toe down.
Yeah.
So right. It's still pretty square. And then when you follow through, it still stays square.
Yeah.
People don't even understand the difference between those. And if you can, I guess, you know, go to a putter, you know, a PGA tours, a PGA superstore or whatever, and practice on different putters, but know the difference of what this putter is,
mm-hmm.
and if it's a good fit for my putting stroke, because mm-hmm. obviously you're not going to change your putting stroke. Your putting stroke is whatever feels comfortable to you.
Right, right. Exactly. Yeah.
But people need to do more research onto mm-hmm. what this putter does and why I need this putter rather than, it's just, I need something new and it costs a lot of money. So that'll help my game for sure.
And this one looks pretty. And so I'm going to get, definitely. Right. I had someone tell me once, you know, not to name brands, but obviously we all know that there are some brands out there that make some really good looking putters, but do you want a piece of art that you're playing with, or do you want something that's going to help you get the ball in the hole? And so I think the reason I bring that up is just because a putter might cost $500 and it's really nice and shiny and it might have a certain face pattern.
Right.
You know, doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to help your score at all.
And in all honesty, you could probably go to a secondhand store and get a putter for $10.
You can.
And technology with putters hasn't changed that much drastically throughout the years. There's little things. Like a more forgiving putter, if you hit it just a little off center, won't affect the ball as much nowadays as it maybe would have 30 years ago.
Right.
But for the most part, putter technology, it hasn't had huge advancements. I will say one with the Odyssey, like the new Old Works putters,
mm-hmm.
the little hinge thing where
it
does kind of change the ball coming off the putter a little bit. And I only know this because if you go on my Instagram. I don't even know what my Instagram is.
So once he figures that out.
But I did a slow-mo of the new putter.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was typically, you know, old putters, as soon as you make impact, it skids and it, you know, may jump. But the putter that I had, it does essentially lift the ball off the ground slightly.
Yeah.
It says it's supposed to give roll right away, but it doesn't. But it does, you know, slow, instead of skidding, it will basically just hover, you know, for the first inch or two of the putt,
right,
and then get rolling.
It's Liam 1110 is your Instagram.
There we go.
There you
there we go.
So go follow him.
Thank you for doing the dirty work.
And I'm looking at the video you're talking about right now, and you're right. It does lift it up just slightly.
And you can see it for the first few inches. Essentially, it's a knuckleball.
Yeah, it is.
And then it does start, you know, it does catch the grass and it does get rolling online.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of other putters maybe hit the ball into the ground, or like I said, it skids, and that first few feet of the putt is where the putt starts. I mean, it's the whole integrity of the putt is... Right. Getting it online, getting it rolling end over end as quickly as possible, and not jumping or not jumping offline.
Yeah, it's important to kind of test all those things out, obviously. And, you know, when we do the tests here, I mean, we don't have all the fancy equipment that, you know, you can go. I've got some things. But, you know, stuff as simple as just using your smartphone to take a video in slow-mo like you just did. I mean, it tells you, it'll give you feedback on how this putter is performing.
Right. And not only the putter performing, but when I kept doing, I needed to get a video of me making the putt.
Yes, of course.
It took a
how
little,
many takes?
It took a little longer than I wanted, that I'm willing to admit.
Yeah.
It was a little frustrating, and I didn't want to, you know, do a putt where there were like four balls behind the hole, so that was my fifth attempt. But even taking a video of that, I noticed that I was a little off center in some of those hits, and people don't practice efficiently anymore. Well, people don't have the time and whatnot.
Right.
But even doing something as small as that, I didn't know I my putting stroke sometimes went off center that much.
Yeah,
and it was kind of an eye opener, and I was like, all right, maybe that's something I have to work on. Maybe I have to put two tees down to make sure I go through the putter. You know, on the same path that...
A common drill that we see on TV a lot, people doing that thing. So it's funny you say that, because I did a review on one of the early Huntington Beach releases, and I did exactly what you just did. I just wanted to show me hitting a putt.
Yeah.
You know, to kind of give the sound of what the putt, because sound's a big thing.
Sure.
You know?
Sound and feel.
Sound and feel. I put it on Twitter, and you couldn't believe... I mean, you wouldn't believe how many people said, well, you hit that off the toe. It's like I was getting lessons just like completely out of the blue. And it's like, all right, well, yeah, thanks. You know, I didn't hit it great. But
leave it to Twitter universe to critique any little thing.
Anything at all.
Yeah.
You always hit it off the toe? Yeah, probably. But anyway. All right. Well, we're just running a little bit out of time, but we'll do more of these.
Sure.
Thanks for coming over to do this. I'm looking forward to... you know, you helping out. It'll be fun. We'll play more golf. We'll test some more stuff. You're going to hear more than just my opinion on a lot of things, which I think is going to be valuable. But then again, Twitter will be the judge of that. Just right. So
go easy on me, Twitter.
You can follow Matt on Instagram, Liam1110. It's LIAM.
It is. And then on Twitter, Matthew Liam. Just Matthew Liam.
Yeah, at Matthew Liam. So go give him. We got to get your follower base up. You're at a healthy 24 right now, and we're gonna get you up there though. But thanks, man.
I appreciate it.
All right.